certainly don't want to play psychologist over here, but by your saying these things in the book, you are expressing those thoughts. There's a part there where you say that you're not supposed to tell your parents that you love them until they're on their deathbed, and but you are telling them that in a sense. You are coming across with these things.
Yes, but I don't say that. I definitely
I'm not
don't
saying,
say that.
But if I were saying, this is how I would say it.
Yeah, I think it's probably accurate, and I think that, and that's you know, and I do like that. It is telling. Like, listen, you know, I mean, my father's a human being. You have to wonder if curiosity has gotten the best of him, and he actually has sat down and read the thing. But like the fact that we have not talked about that, and that he, if he has or that he won't tell me, that's kind of what the book is about in a lot of ways. So I, you know, I think that, you know, I still, you know, I still call, I called Dad after the All-Star game, which is, you know, later than both of our bedtimes anymore. I called him after the All-Star game, you know, and we, you know, I mean, there are a million things going on in his life and a million things going on in my life, but this, you know, that's the thing that we immediately have, and it's an important thing for both of us.
We've been talking with Will Leach, author of Are We Winning? Fathers and Sons in the New Golden Age of Baseball. How does it feel to be part of the mainstream journalism again?
Hey, you know, I always felt that I was never all that far from it in the first place. You know, that I always when you look at the when you look at the famous Bissinger incident, that I think the thing that was disappointing about that was it polarized two things that didn't need to be polarized. You know, one of the great ironies of that evening was that literally that exact, I think maybe a month before, Buzz and I had stories on opposite pages of the New York Times Play magazine, the lost, much lamented, gone Play magazine. And, you know, I think that certainly we'd taken different paths to get there. But, you know, I never really, you know, I think that a lot of the and I think I'm at probably the early days of my time at Deadspin are probably, they certainly bear their brunt of blame for this as well. But, you know, I think that, you know, the notion that there is the mainstream media and there is blogs or so on was never really a very fair split anyway. You know, and, you know, I work for New York Magazine now. I've been working here for a couple of years now, but, you know, I've been writing stuff for New York and the New York Times and Esquire and GQ while I was at Deadspin. You know, I think it wasn't like I was like, okay, today I put on my Deadspin hat and today I put on my Times hat. It was the same stuff, you know, and I think that when New York brought me over here, I think they knew what they were getting, and it's worked out very well. So I think that certainly, you know, it makes, you know, it made for a fun little debate there a couple of years ago, but I don't mean specifically even that, but like the general talk of it all. But, you know, I think that, I mean, heck, if you look at Deadspin now, you know, certainly I think it's maybe getting a little coarser than it was during my reign, but also I think it's doing a lot of investigative reporting that we used to count on the mainstream media for in a lot of ways. And you know, it's funny to think when I started Deadspin in 2005, which is crazy because it seems like both really long ago and very recently, you know, like ESPN.com would not use the word blog. Like, and now when you look at it, it's the centerpiece of everything they have. I think you're seeing people recognize that it's just a medium rather than a movement.
When you did these articles for the other publications, do you think that this is like a chicken egg situation? Do you think you were engaged because of your iconoclastic reputation with Deadspin?
You know, I like to think that it's because they, you know, I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do Deadspin in the first place. So I moved to New York and I'd moved to New York and kind of got out. I'd worked at the Sporting News in 98 and 99, and then moved to New York to quote to make it as a writer, which basically meant working for .com jobs that lasted for 3 months and everybody got fired. But hey, you could bring your dog in the office, so there was that. I think you know, I'd struggled for like a long time, and you know, the reason Deadspin even was founded in the first place was because myself and AJ, who does Deadspin now, and Eric Gillen, who works for Hearst now, and Aileen Gallagher, who works with me here at New York Magazine, you know, the four of us were all struggling journalists, all just trying to figure out what we were going to do. So we started this site called The Black Table that was basically a place for you know, writers who had pieces killed from other magazines for a place to put their stuff, and then it kind of developed its own voice, became a larger thing. So they had seen my stuff there, and so one of the reasons I was excited about doing Desna was not, it really wasn't this idea of, like, I'm going to change the sports media. You know, in a lot of ways, like any writer, you know, you're looking to broaden an audience. You know, you're looking to have more people see your stuff, and so that was one of the things that was exciting for me about it. So I may have fooled myself into thinking that, but I certainly hoped that the people that did want me to do stuff, because, you know, and they weren't exactly, like, they weren't assigning me, hey, well, write us a story about how the mainstream media stinks. You know, they were having me write about, you know, I think the typical stories you would imagine for a magazine, just kind of in my own voice and my own angle on it. And I think that, you know, it's funny to think, you know, as we talked early on and off air about the idea that, like, you know, this notion that somehow I'm, that because I did Deadspin, there's cynicism, and to me, I think that's definitely the opposite of what it is. You know, I it's been exciting for me in the 5 years since Deadspin has happened to see all these alternative voices that kind of had a different experience and a different route coming in to write about these things, having platforms all over the place. And, you know, to me, good writing is good writing wherever it is. So certainly, I think that certainly there's never been a time where I've been like, when I was doing Deadspin or now, where I'm like, oh, I need to go into this persona somehow. You know, for better or worse, this is what I do, and sometimes people like it, and sometimes people don't. And to me, that's better than nobody caring.
Do you have something in the planning stages for your next book?
Especially, I just, you know, much to the chagrin of my publicist at Hyperion and also my now new wife, I got married and had the book come out within a month of one another. The book came out on May 4th, and I got married on June 5th. So I'm hoping to spend the summer figuring that idea out. I haven't decided yet. You know, to me, it's the book is going well. They're happy with how it's going. My general rule about books is it's the same thing as when I was doing Desna. I never wanted to know web traffic. I don't want to know that stuff. Just give me a box and I'll write in it. And so, like, the book, my general thing about books is if I sell well enough to let me do another one, where they let me do another one, awesome. I've done my job. So I think they are going to let me do another one. So I haven't decided what it's going to be about yet. Part of me, you know, I take a lot of joy in writing about things that aren't sports. And that's actually, you know, the sports thing turned out to be a little bit of an accident because the opportunity at Deadspin was there. But, you know, I like, you know, you know, as anyone that's covered sports professionally can tell you, sometimes if you get a little bit too close to it, you start to not like them anymore. it starts to become not fun. And to me, that was one of the major reasons I started Deadspin in the first place, and one of the founding principles of kind of how I kind of run my career anyway is I just write about things that I care about. And if it gets to a point where I'm like, ugh, I have to write another World Series story, well, then I need to probably take a break. Because not only will it not be fun for me, but, you know, I'm not really very good at faking anything. So I thought about maybe making the next book non-sports related, but I don't know if anyone will care. But of course, I don't know why anyone cared about this one, so, you know, what do I know?
I was just going to say, do you fear being pigeonholed in a specific genre because of your reputation?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's something that anyone would fear. You know, I think, you know, I regularly write movie reviews for my own son. I write a lot of, you know, wrote a feature about Twitter for the magazine and on the actress Sarah Silverman and the show Parks Recreation. Like, those are some of my favorite things to write about, things that are not sports. And certainly it's funny that everyone, but, I mean, yeah, do I do a little bit of a double take when you know, I'll write something not about sports and they'll be like, oh, look at that. Will Leach wrote something not about sports. Yeah, that's a little... that's strange considering how long I went without writing about sports. So, yeah, you do have to shake it up. But the main thing is, you know, I mean, 3 years ago, in 2003, from 2000 to 2004, I was, you know, stuffing envelopes at temp jobs and answering phones at Telemundo. And by the way, they tell you at the temp place that you don't need to speak Spanish. To answer phones at Telemundo, you do, in fact, need to speak Spanish to answer phones at Telemundo. So, you know, I get to write for a living. That's really all I ever really wanted to do. So as long as I can keep that going, I feel pretty lucky.
How did you come about to do a young adult novel?
That was actually because I actually didn't even know it was a young adult novel until I was halfway done.
And I should say the name of the novel is Chase.
Is Catch.
I'm sorry, Catch.
Catch, yes. And
three of the letters, right?
Exactly, it's close. Because that came out before Deadspin. The book came out the second month of Deadspin, but it had been done for a long time. And that was because, you know, one of the columns on the Black Table, our old site, was called Life as a Loser, and it was it was a weekly column that ran online and some alternative newspapers, and it was just basically observations, and it was basically batting practice. I was just trying to get to be a better writer, and someone, an editor at Penguin's Razorbill imprint, saw that and liked the voice of them and said, "Well, what did you think about writing a young adult novel?" And I remember, I was like, "Yeah, I didn't really know a lot about young adult novels. I knew Mom, the Wolfman, and Me from when I was a kid, and I'm not even sure. I think that may be a 12-year-old, that may be even younger than what we're looking for." So they showed me some of them. And they were all Gossip Girl, they were some really fancy prep school somewhere.
Right.
And I was like, "I don't actually feel like most people grow up this way at all." So I wrote Catch, which is basically about a kid. But the summer after he graduates from high school, before he goes to college, and trying to figure out himself and where he's going to, he meets an older woman, and he has to figure out whether he's going to stay in his hometown or go off to college. And I liked the idea. I wanted to write a book where people hung out at the Hardee's and the Walmart rather than hung out at the Abercrombie & Finch and the American Apparel, I suppose. So by the way, I've betrayed my total lack of knowledge about how rich people live. I don't think they hang out at Abercrombie & Finch and American Apparel. I'm just guessing.
Anymore, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So that was what I wanted to do with it. And that was funny. Yeah, that's a book that I'm actually still pretty proud of, though. I think it's definitely probably the least read of any of the books.
Well, when I was looking in your past works, I came across that as a young adult novel from Will Leach. I have to check this out.
Yeah, it's nice, you know, but it's still like, you know, there were many debates about, because I wasn't even aware really that it was going to be an adult novel, other than the fact that it had a 17-year-old protagonist. I wasn't even really thinking about whether or not this was going to be a young adult novel until they were like, "Okay, well, now here's our rules about young adults. No one can be, if there's any sex, it has to be off screen," which was fine, by the way. I'm not good enough writer to write a sex scene. Ugh, I could never do that.
What did your parents say?
Well, unfortunately, Dad wouldn't read it. So it was a fun experience, and it's still in print. And anytime something is still in print, I'm happy.
Now, since you have written on both sides of the literature seesaw, did you find one more difficult than the other?
I find writing nonfiction a lot harder because you can't just make the little people do what you want them to. You have to actually have them do what they actually did.
Well, it depends what kind of writer you are, I mean.
I suppose Jason Blair would disagree, I suppose, in that regard. But we actually interviewed him for the Black Table one time. And we actually, it was right after, it was literally the day before he was on Larry King. We just randomly sent him an email thinking there's no way, and he actually agreed, and we actually got to ask him the question. So because you're short, was it easier to hide from fact checkers? And he actually said yes. He's actually
stuck under the desk until they walk
by. I was like, what, just like hop in a cabinet? The hard part about fiction is figuring out the story and figuring out the arc. But once you've got that figured out and like you know where your guys are going and where they're ending up, it's actually a little easier because you can move in where you want to do and you can have them say whatever you want them to say. And I guarantee if there's a bunch of people that have written fiction right now are listening to this and being like, "You are an idiot. I hate everything about you." And it's hard to disagree with them.
Well, I wonder, you know, not having written fiction, is it which is more difficult to self-edit? I mean, at what point, you know, I imagine, unless your publisher tells you, you know, "I need, you know, like 80,000 words and this, that's it," you can, in fiction, you just keep going on and on and on.
Editors tend to enjoy working with me both on the book and the magazine side because I trust and recognize that they are smarter than me and trust their judgment, and they're farther away from it. You know, I trust their judgment on stuff more than I trust my own in a lot of ways. But when it comes, you know, so with fiction, yeah, you can go on and on, but, you know, to me, the key thing and the reason I think Catch works and the reason it's the next thing I do is a novel, which I'm kind of considering, you know, to me, it all kind of locks into place because before I even said sit down and start writing anything, I try to like really map out where the story's going and where the people are going. And I leave room for adjustment and leave room for them to move their arms around a little bit. But in a lot of ways, I think that if you're not quite sure where you're going, sometimes you can get a little you can lose touch with what this was supposed to be about in the first place. So I'm very much a strict plotter. Even with Are We Winning, I knew like before I ever sat down to write any of the chapters in the book, I was like, okay, this chapter is going to be about this. This chapter is going to be about this. I really mapped it all out before I actually started, before I even really got deep into the book, into the writing, because it just helps me. You know, I have a linear brain. I'm not good at multitasking. I know exactly what I'm writing, and then I need to know when I'm done. So I find that easier. I find that works with actually fiction and nonfiction.
So are you saying then that you take the jigsaw puzzle and you make the pieces fit? Because if you're writing about the fifth inning and Edmonds is coming up and this runner is on base, and then you shift over to what you had planned to say, how do you make that fit?
Well, I certainly did this outline after the game. You know, so I certainly like knew
the
path of the game, yeah. But certainly once before I actually started to really start writing it, I was like, okay, by the way, I was very fortunate because my now wife was supposed to record that game for me back in New York while I was in Chicago for that game and forgot. Which happens. And but fortunately, that game is on iTunes because the Cubs did actually clinch the division that day. So I have watched that game, every second of that game, so many times that I think I burned out my computer. I watched it so many times. So that was helpful with the planning of it too. Is the idea like, here's what happened in this inning. This is gonna make me go in this direction. This will make me move over here. That made it a lot easier. And my general thing about writing is you just have to just keep doing it. You know, I wrote a piece about Roger Ebert for Deadspin a while back. And Roger Ebert was a hero of mine. He went to the University of Illinois like I did. And he, his main tenet of writing is that the muse comes during the act of creation, not before it. And I love that idea. The idea that like you have to just work all the time. You have to just write. You have to get better. It's the only thing you can control. And part of that I use as an excuse to say, well, I'm not that good now, but I'm writing a lot, so I'm trying to get better. But also I think it's a good general kind of tenet for anyone that's working in this is just to try to get better. Work all the time.
I guess it's like you're writing muscle. You know, you keep on working it, and it gets better and bigger.
Yeah, and if you don't, I was so busy with the book and the wedding that I hadn't. So I used to review every movie that I saw for my personal website, and I've just been so busy I haven't done it for a few months. I actually just did capsule reviews today, just as batting practice. I just like called it. Actually, it was just batting practice, just to get my swing back a little bit. They're not that good, but I'll get the swing back and I'll get back in the game.
Well, it's the All-Star break. You can be forgiven for taking a break.
Exactly. It wasn't a home run derby, I assure you. There were lots of foul balls on the third baseline.
And we've been talking with Will Leach, author of Are We Winning? Fathers and Sons in the New Golden Age of Baseball, and Catch, the young adult novel. Will, I wanted to thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Of course, very much my honor, sir. Thank you for having me.
That was my interview with Will Leach, author of Are We Winning? Fathers and Sons in the New Golden Age of Baseball. Well, that about wraps it up for this edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, the podcast edition. Please tune in again soon when we'll have more features and more guest interviews.